From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. A day after Governor Hogan vetoed the Democrats' approach to drawing congressional districts, we asked Len Lazarek, editor of MarylandReporter.com, to recap how the system works and the pressures to change it. Boundaries drawn by the Democrats in power after the 2010 census helped Democrats gain a seat in Congress, and now a lawsuit challenges whether that round of redistricting violated the U.S. Constitution.
Republicans are claiming that their First Amendment rights of free association have been deliberately undermined by the governor and the legislature.
Plus, we ask Tufts Professor Moon Duchin how geometry can challenge gerrymandered districts. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The way Maryland draws political boundaries is ever more fraught. Governor Hogan yesterday vetoed a bill sent to him by the Democratic-controlled legislature. It would have set up an independent commission to draw the lines now drawn by politicians, but only if five other Atlantic states also set up such a commission. Democratic leaders vowed to override the veto, alleging the governor's goal is to elect more Republicans to Congress. Maryland's 3rd congressional district, represented by Democrat John Sarbanes, is a good example of what the fuss is about. A federal judge has described it as a, quote, broken-winged pterodactyl lying prostrate across the center of the state. The 3rd district includes voters in Howard, Montgomery, Baltimore, and Anne Arundel counties, as well as Baltimore City. It has frequently been called out as an example of gerrymandering, boundaries drawn for one political party to gain advantage. Both congressional and state districts are redrawn every 10 years to reflect the latest census count. The outline of the 3rd district is part of the map of congressional boundaries that was drawn by Governor Martin O'Malley and approved by the legislature in 2011 and upheld by voters in referendum in 2012. Now, a lawsuit before the U.S. District Court of Maryland challenges the constitutionality of the state's redistricting process. Former Governor O'Malley, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush have all been deposed. Joining me to discuss Maryland's redistricting process and proposals to change it is Len Lazarek, editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com. He has covered Maryland's redistricting woes extensively. Welcome back to On the Record.
Nice to be here.
How does Maryland draw its congressional district?
Well, it draws its congressional districts really in an informal process. There are laws on the books, but how it's worked the last two times is the governor appoints an informal committee. And it's informal, and it's not created by executive order or by statute or anything. It's not subject to the Open Meetings Act. So it's simply an advisory committee. They put together the proposal, and redistricting actually refers to the legislature. Reapportionment refers to Congress.
In both cases, we're talking about drawing the boundaries of districts that will be from whom representatives will be elected, either elected to Congress or elected to the
Correct.
State legislature.
And there is a slightly different process as they go to the legislature. But in any case, that's how the process worked. And they did hearings around the state, but then when they actually came up with the maps, they released the maps on the weekend, and they didn't have any hearings after the maps were actually drawn.
So they had hearings where people could make general comments about what they thought should be done, but there were no hearings to actually critique the shape of the districts.
No. There were hearings when they got to the legislature, but it was a single afternoon of hearings about the maps.
Well, do the districts drawn in that process always go to referendum? Is there always?
No.
But
no.
There was, in 2012, a referendum on the districts.
There were objections to it, and there was a lawsuit filed over the language that the Secretary of State, an O'Malley appointee, wrote. It basically said, these are the districts that we drew because it's required by the Constitution after the census. People didn't have any maps to look at. So it basically, it passed overwhelmingly, and they will use this
the referendum.
The referendum. The districts pass, and people say, it went to referendum, and they passed it. Well, the language basically said, this is something we had to do under the U.S. Constitution, and it didn't say anything about the controversy or whatever. So there is a serious question whether the voters understood what they were voting on.
What standards have to be met by, in the process you described, the governor and some advisors in drawing their maps, what standards do they have to meet?
It's different for the legislature than it is for Congress. For Congress, there are essentially no standards other than the Voting Rights Act and that the districts have to be almost exactly the same in number. They have to be evenly divided on the population.
And you say that's different than requirements to draw the districts for state legislators.
Right. For the legislative districts, there are requirements that they be compact, contiguous, recognize natural and political boundaries. But none of those requirements exist for the federal law.
So for at least the last 2 years, Governor Hogan has introduced legislation to change how congressional districts are drawn. What has he proposed?
He first of all set up a commission, and they had a bunch of hearings around the state. And then they came up with a series of recommendations that basically Governor Hogan introduced as a proposed constitutional amendment. Essentially, what it did was set up an independent commission. No politicians could serve, no relatives of politicians could serve, no lobbyists could serve. So these lines have to be redrawn after the census every 10 years, which is in the U.S. Constitution, and it's why we have the census, as a matter of fact, so they could count the number of people for the House of Representatives. In any case, the proposal was to set up this commission, and in each of the last 2 years, it was essentially dead on arrival anyway. There were certainly some problems with the bill, and not everybody on the commission agreed with how it was set up or how it would work. But there was no attempt by the legislature to work on it or make it better. Instead, this year they came up with their own proposal.
That Democratic proposal is the one Governor Hogan vetoed yesterday. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Len Lazarick, editor of MarylandReporter.com. He has extensively covered arguments over how Maryland draws congressional and legislative districts. So the debate seems entirely defined by party lines. Walk us quickly through the arguments.
The argument against it is that it is a completely partisan process, that incumbents get to choose their voters, voters don't get to choose their incumbents. And the lines were drawn essentially to keep the Democratic incumbents happy. In the last round in 2011, after the 2010 census, we have 8 members of the House of Representatives. There were 2 Republicans and 6 Democrats. The lines were drawn in such a way so that now, and this was the intended result, that there is 1 Republican, Andy Harris, in District 1 on the Eastern Shore, and District 6 in the Western Maryland became Democratic when John Delaney beat the incumbent Roscoe Bartlett. It forced them to pack. There's a term in districting called packing. Packing means putting people of a certain party in one district. So in order to pack as many Republicans into Andy Harris's district, which he was already representing, it begins in Ocean City, goes all the way up through Harford County, goes across northern Baltimore County and into Carroll County to Tawny Town. So it goes from Ocean City almost to the Frederick County line.
Let me ask you about the approach the Democrats took in dealing with Governor Hogan's proposal, which was essentially to say, sure, in the 2017 General Assembly, they said, sure, okay, let's set up a commission, but only if 5 relatively close states also set up a commission, if Virginia and Pennsylvania and New Jersey and New York and North Carolina set up commissions, then Maryland will have
set
a commission.
Not only set up an independent commission, but set it up with similar criteria that is spelled out in the law. And as a matter of fact, the law that they actually passed picks up the language from the governor's bill about the criteria for how the lines should be drawn. However, the commission is hardly independent because its members are appointed by the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, the Minority Leader of the House, the Minority Leader of the Senate. They appoint the majority of the commission, so it's hardly detached from the political process.
The Democratic argument, though, seems to be Maryland should only act if other states act.
Yes, but the term is used, unilateral disarmament. The redistricting that happened in 2011 was largely a reaction to what has happened in all the Republican-controlled states across the country. Some Democrats even blame Obama and the Democratic National Committee for not concentrating on this. In 2010, there were 17 states that were totally controlled by Democrats, Democratic governor, Democratic legislature. In 2017, this year, there were only 5 of those states. And that's because of the redistricting that has happened all across the country, largely dominated by Republicans.
I mentioned that former Governor O'Malley has been deposed in a lawsuit challenging the 2011 redrawing of the state's congressional districts. What has O'Malley said about that process recently?
Well, the deposition was in private, so we don't know what he said during the deposition. And he and the Speaker and the President of the Senate resisted being deposed, claiming executive privilege and legislative privilege, and the federal judges overruled that. O'Malley, to my surprise, at my alma mater, as a matter of fact, Boston College, he basically admitted that this was a political process done for partisan reasons, and it shouldn't happen anymore.
The process that he was involved in.
The process that he actually did. So it was kind of a confession after the fact.
Who is challenging it in court, and what is the timeline of that case?
Well, the timeline is going to be very long, however it happens, because it's not going to end with the district court, although there will there are only 2 layers because it's a 3-judge panel. The unusual thing about this case is they're using a different argument than has been used in other redistricting cases. Republicans are claiming that their First Amendment rights of free association have been deliberately undermined by the governor and the legislature in doing this. The previous arguments have tended to rely on federal law, equal protection clause, and things like that. This is a somewhat novel argument. And one of the reasons we're in this situation is that for decades, the Supreme Court has refused to give any kind of guidelines about how to draw congressional district lines. Cases have come to them, and they steadfastly refuse to get into what they see as a very political process.
So there will be another census in 2020, and that will set up a new round of drawing districts. But before then, Maryland has state elections in 2018. How will that affect the process for drawing boundaries in Maryland?
I believe, and this is kind of, you're now asking a speculative question, but I believe if Governor Hogan gets reelected, I think the legislature will make a change, because if he gets reelected, he will be in charge of the process that we have now. Will he propose another independent commission? I don't know. But the way the current law is written, the governor has considerable power in drawing these lines. The legislature has a role, but it has more constraints. And it's very difficult for them to agree, especially on their own district lines, because what helps one legislator hurts another. So basically, they're satisfied with a process where the governor gives them the lines and they say, okay, we'll accept that.
I really appreciate your walking us through it. Thank you.
Okay.
Len Lazarick is editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com. You can find links to his recent stories about redistricting at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break, and when we come back, how can you measure the fairness of a district? We'll speak to a mathematician who uses geometry to address gerrymandering. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about drawing congressional districts. Compactness is a standard many states aim to use in drawing their congressional boundaries. However, it remains largely undefined by courts or legislatures. When you see the rambling boundaries of some districts around the country, you might question how lawmakers justify such designs. Joining me to discuss why compactness matters and how it can be measured is Moon Duchin on the line from Tufts University. Moon Duchin is Associate Professor of Mathematics and Director of Tufts Science, Technology, and Society Program. Welcome to On the Record.
Hello. Thanks. Good to be here.
In your view, how pervasive is gerrymandering across the country?
Well, I mean, if you define it as broadly as you can, which is just drawing boundaries to achieve some sort of political outcome, then you find it everywhere. The more narrowly you define gerrymandering, the harder it is to locate and the harder it is to fight. And that's actually one of the legal issues that we face, is not good enough definitions to work with.
Not good enough definition. Well, can you tell if a district is gerrymandered just by looking at it?
Well, good question. So that's one of the principles that's available to us, is that districts should be compact and contiguous. So we have a legal history of using shape as a kind of red flag indicator of possible agenda-driven line drawing. But there are other ways as well, and in order to have kind of a robust and thoroughgoing idea about gerrymandering, you need more than just shape, but still it should be an important component.
So if shape is an important component and compactness is a value, if mm-hmm. not clearly defined, circles are compact. Should that be kind of our goal, that something that's closer to being a circle is probably a better district?
Right. So almost every idea that people have had for what compactness ought to mean favors circles, because they're very symmetrical, they're very regular, they have as much area as possible relative to their perimeter, so they seem nice and compact. I like to say that if you take a handful of snow and you compact it, it's going to get rounder. So we have this kind of intuition that circles are good when it comes to compactness. But of course, they have some issues as congressional districts, because for one thing, they don't pack together neatly to tile space. So you're never going to get perfectly round districts. However, almost every idea, as I said, for kind of giving meaning to compactness measures deviation from a circle.
How do you measure compactness?
One thing you could do, which is a time-honored tradition in math, is look at the isoperimetric ratio. You could compare area to perimeter. As I said a moment ago, that's one of the classical invariants that favors circles. And the right way to do that from a math point of view is to take area divided by the square of perimeter, so that you get something unitless that doesn't change when you scale a shape. So that's been tried in redistricting law. That goes by the name Polsby-Popper score, although most mathematicians would tell you it doesn't really need its own name, because we've been thinking about it since antiquity.
Okay, so that's one way to measure compactness. You indicated there are others.
There are many others. I think over 30 have been tried out. Another family of ideas is to measure dispersion, to look at kind of on average how far apart are voters in your district. That's a good way to get a handle on compactness. And then another family of ideas looks at convexity. Are there gaps or chunks missing from your shape, which might also be an indicator that you're trying to rig the shape to achieve an outcome.
So there's all these different approaches. Is there one favored by most mathematicians who look at this?
So that's been an issue over the years in legal contexts, is that courts have asked for just one. But mathematicians will tell you that all of these different indicators they pick up different kinds of anomalies and pathologies in your shape. And it would be nice to come up with a composite that takes everything into account. One of the things that my working group is thinking about is whether new technology that's coming in through redistricting allows you to take multiple convexity scores into, compactness scores into account, and not have to rely on a single, sort of raising up a single score as the lone indicator.
That's Professor Moon Duchin here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cash. She is Associate Professor of Mathematics at Tufts University. We're talking about her efforts to address gerrymandering. You mentioned your work group. Is that the geometry and gerrymandering group?
We call ourselves the MGGG, the Metric Geometry and Gerrymandering Group. And we're looking at a range of different geometric and computational approaches to understanding when a shape is really too bad to be allowed.
Oh, so you're looking for the outliers. In other words, you're not trying to say this is what you should do. It's more to say you really don't do this.
Yeah, that's right. That's a focus of our work, is to think about constraints on line drawers, because the tradition is pretty clear that a lot of deference is given to state legislatures for drawing their own lines. Still, there need to be kind of watchdogs against the worst gerrymandering abuses, and that's where we hope to make a contribution.
So walk me through the process. You'll make a contribution by writing articles, by doing interviews like this? How do you do it?
We've already got our first few things in the pipeline, and that is publications. So we're trying to look on a kind of deeper mathematical level. One thing that we think about is what the various kinds of compactness scores actually have in common in terms of the underlying metric geometry. So that's one thing we're doing, is trying to make a scholarly contribution. But also, we're working on a series of regional workshops around the country in which we'll train people as possible expert witnesses for future redistricting cases. We have a census coming up in not so long, in 2020. And after that, every state's going to have to redraw its lines. Well, almost every state. And we hope to be there to help consult and to keep an eye on the process.
So when you talk about expert witnesses, my first thought was you're assuming there's going to be a bunch of lawsuits.
Oh, that's a safe assumption.
But are you also talking about being expert witnesses to the legislatures as they draw congressional boundaries?
Right. I hope we'll be available as expert consultants, as well as just sort of through the legal process. But we have been told by civil rights groups and other legal partners that there's a real need right now for a new generation of technically oriented expert witnesses for the law cases. We had a kind of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which has been a check on redistricting for 50-plus years, was substantially weakened a few years ago by the Supreme Court, and that's opened the floodgates for a lot more redistricting lawsuits, and we'd like to be on hand to help.
We have just a couple minutes left, and I want to get a little better understanding of how the mathematics fits into the larger picture. I mean, is compactness the most important factor in determining whether a district has been drawn fairly compared to communities of interest?
Right, exactly. There's a suite of traditional districting principles, and compactness is really only one. And I would never say it's the most important. But I do think, I've come to think that it's an underused tool. That, in other words, particularly in the 1990s, courts heard a lot of shape-based cases and kind of threw up their hands, saying that there's no principled way to decide on what shapes are good and bad. There's actually kind of a charming quote in, if you look at the opinions of the Supreme Court decisions in the 90s, where justices say, we can't be conducting endless beauty contests on our congressional district. Right. So we'd like to think that mathematicians can help move it from the realm of beauty contests into something a bit more rigorous, and that won't take the place of preserving communities of interest, ensuring racial fairness, and all of the other principles. But we'd like to have it in the arsenal of people who are, looking out for fairer and more open democratic elections.
So you mentioned you're having regional workshops. Do you know whether any mathematicians from Maryland are availing themselves of your training?
Oh, they are indeed. We actually already, as of a month or two ago, had people in our database from all 50 states. We've had a really quite inspiring response. Our mailing list is up to an unbelievable 2,800 people. So we're drawing people from all over the country. But definitely Maryland is one of the hot spots, as I'm sure for redistricting hijinks, and it's definitely one of the states that's high on our radar for looking out for the next round of redistricting.
Thank you so much for talking to us about this. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure.
Moon Duchin is Associate Professor of Mathematics at Tufts University and Director of the School's Science, Technology, and Society program. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. Very glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.